Let's begin with a look at the weather forecast. For today, mostly sunny, with a southeasterly wind at 5 to 10 miles per hour, the high 71, the low 47. Tomorrow, partly sunny, a southerly wind at 5 to 15 miles per hour, a high of 72, a low of 48. Then on Wednesday, partly sunny, southwesterly wind at 5 to 15 miles per hour, a high of 71 and a low of 46. Then come Thursday, partly sunny, with a westerly wind at 20 to 30 miles per hour plus, a high of 60 and a low of 32. Let's take a look at today's top weather story from meteorologist Corey Thompson. While our normal highs have slipped below 70 now, that doesn't mean that getting a high in the 70s is totally out of the question for October. For the period 1991 to 2020, the same as our normal highs and lows are based on right now, we averaged about 8 days of 70 or above during October. Of those 8 days, between 5 and 6 of them typically happen in the first half of the month. If our current forecast is dead on, we'll be at 5 days of at least 70 by midweek this week. Cooler days are more common, though. Highs in the 50s or less account for an average of just over 13 days in October. We'll add some of those to our count this week, too. That is today's weather story from meteorologist Corey Thompson. On the front page of today's Gazette, we have a story written by Grace King of the Gazette, Healthy Kids Clinics Mark 15th Anniversary. Dateline, Iowa City. Healthy Kids school-based clinics provide Kelly Alvarado the health care she needs to succeed as a student in the Iowa City Community School District. The 17-year-old Alvarado, who graduated in May from Iowa City West High School, received free physicals and dental and dermatology care through the clinics. The physicals enable her to play the sports she loved, including football as a seventh grader and softball. Alvarado, who is saving money to go to college and has dreams of becoming either a mechanic or a criminal profiler, said, "I'm really grateful for the free medical care." Healthy Kids School-Based Clinics is celebrating 15 years of providing free services for children from birth through high school graduation who are uninsured, who cannot afford high deductibles or copays, or who experience extreme barriers to accessing health care. To mark the anniversary, a goal is to raise $250,000 by March 1st. About 5% of students, or 725, in the Iowa City Community School District are uninsured, according to the clinics. The number does not include preschoolers and students from other districts who also use the clinic's services. 3,000 children in Johnson County have no dental insurance. Dr. Marguerite Odding, co-founder and pediatrics medical doctor for the program, said, "Healthy children learn better. It's hard to pay attention in class if you're having an asthma attack, bad eczema, or ADHD and can't get medications. You aren't allowed to attend school if you don't have proper immunizations. You can't play sports if you don't have a physical." To meet the need, the clinics need to offer 1,800 appointments a year, double the number they were able to provide in the 2021-22 school year. In addition to Iowa City students, the clinics serve children from Regina Catholic Education Center in Iowa City and Clear Creek Amana and Solon and West Branch school districts. Donations can help by opening more clinic sessions, paying for equipment and supplies to furnish a site, purchasing a refrigerator and freezer to store vaccines, paying for medications for children, covering psychological testing for learning and attention problems, and buying inhalers, lab testing, and transportation for families to and from appointments. The clinic began as a collaboration between the Iowa City Community School District, Mercy Hospital, the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinic, and United Way, after a community needs assessment by the school district found some students weren't thriving in school because of a lack of access to health care. The district built three full-fledged clinics that feel like a traditional doctor's office, Odding said. Clinics are located inside Iowa City High School, Northwest Junior High School, and Southeast Junior High School. Clinic workers also travel to Iowa City West High once a month. Provider time is donated by the UI Hospitals and Clinics. A volunteer pediatrician and dermatologist come once a month. Services include health care, mental health care, management of acute and chronic illness, dental care, vision care, and referrals for lab tests, x-rays, and specialty care. The clinic also helps with the cost of medications, lab tests, glasses, and other services. The clinic tries to alleviate barriers to care whenever possible. For example, taxis are provided for people without transportation. Parents must give consent and do not need to accompany teens to every appointment, which decreases parents' time away from their work. There are over 2,500 school-based clinics in the United States, another of which is Metro Care Connection in Cedar Rapids. The clinic's annual operating budget is between $170,000 and $180,000. Funds for healthy kids' school-based clinics come from the City of Iowa City, small grants, and United Way. The clinics have an endowment of $2 million initiated by Mercy Hospital. The dream is for the endowment to grow to $5 million for the clinics to live off, according to Ann Vandenberg, the chair of the advisory board. Monetary donations are accepted at each clinic site. Also on the front page is a story written by Vanessa Miller of the Gazette. UI athletes comply with gender equity rules. Dateline, Iowa City. The University of Iowa Athletics Department, quote, appears to be in compliance with Title IX's equitable treatment provisions, end quote, according to the first annual report produced by a compliance monitor the university was required to obtain last year as part of a settlement of a gender equity lawsuit. Gabriel Feldman is a sports law professor with Tulane University and director of the Tulane Sports Law Program, and assessed UI athletics compliance in 13 areas and largely found no material issues across the board. Only the UI women's gymnastic facility, quote, is not on par with the impressive facilities used by most of the other UI teams. He went on to say, the existing facility has limited gym space, inadequate locker room and restroom facilities, limited facilities for strength and conditioning or training and recovery on site, and limited temperature and humidity controls. That was in Feldman's report, which was posted Saturday afternoon on the UI Athletics webpage, barely meeting the settlement deadline of no later than October 1st. Feldman wrote, referencing the UI's decision to cut men's gymnastics, tennis, and swimming and diving after the 2020-2021 academic year due to pandemic-compelled fiscal losses, that this facility did not create an inequity for men and women until the men's team was eliminated. And he noted, UI plans for a new $7 million to $9 million gymnastics and spirit squad training center that should resolve those facility inequities. The university received Board of Regents permissions last November to start planning the project, to be fully funded with gifts, although UI Athletics hasn't brought back to the board plans, a budget, or construction timeline for that project in the years since. The department's announcement in August 2020 that tens of millions in losses from the pandemic gave it no choice but to drop not just the three men's sports, but also women's swimming and diving, is what precipitated Feldman's appointment as UI Title IX monitor. Several female swimmers sued the school, accusing it of gender equity law violations aggravated by their team's elimination. As part of their lawsuit, the women tapped the Title IX expertise of Sports Management Resources President Donna Lapiano, who found the UI out of compliance with the law. A federal judge, after considering the women's arguments and Lapiano's testimony, ordered the UI to temporarily reinstate women's swimming and diving, pending the outcome of the litigation, finding reason to believe the swimmers could win their case. 9 months later, the UI settled with the women, agreeing to, among other things, permanently reinstating their sport for at least 7 years, adding women's wrestling, capping the women's rowing roster, and hiring Feldman to monitor their ongoing compliance with federal Title IX gender equity requirements. Although Feldman was appointed a year ago, his report, made public Saturday, showed he conducted a site visit at UI just weeks ago, on August 26th. During his visit, Feldman toured athletics facilities and met with coaches and staff. He also evaluated data regarding gender equity at the UI, reviewed internal handbooks and policies, and was given an opportunity to speak with athletes. In assessing whether the UI meets the Title IX mandate to provide athletic opportunities for men and women substantially proportionate to the campus's full-time male and female undergraduate enrollment, Feldman found the university last year was close and is right on the right track, putting it in compliance. He noted, pointing to a growing female swimming roster and the addition of women's wrestling, both changes compelled by the settlement that, quote, substantial, not exact, proportionality is required. Last academic year, 52% of Iowa's 780 athletic participation opportunities went to women, while its full-time undergraduate enrollment was 56% female. Given its women's swimming roster has swelled from 13 last year to 22 this year, with plans to grow to about 30, and women's wrestling is set to start competing next year with a roster of 30-some female participation, will substantially increase this year and the following years, and it thus appears that you and I will comply. Feldman's assessment looked only at last year and did not review the Hawkeyes' historical compliance. LaPiano's expert report did, however, and found non-compliance every year back to at least 2003. The largest percentage shortfall was 11% in 2005-06, when female athletes made up 42% of the opportunities, compared with their 53% undergraduate representation at the time, according to LaPiano. Her report found that in 2020-2021, before the three men's sports officially were eliminated, UNI female athletic opportunities were 8 percentage points shy at 47% to their 55% undergrad representation. Regarding the Title IX requirements, schools offer proportionally equal amounts of financial assistance to male and female student athletes. Feldman, in his new report, found that UI appears to have achieved nearly exact proportionality in 2021-2022. He reported 52% of UI's 612 unduplicated student-athletes were women, and women received 53% of UI Athletics' $11.3 million in student aid, which he says complies with Title IX's athletic financial assistance requirements. His report found that when looking at equitable equipment and supplies, game and practice scheduling, travel allowances, academic tutoring access, locker room and competition facilities, medical and training services, housing and dining facilities, publicity, recruitment, and support services, there do not appear to be any material issues or meaningful differences. He came to the same conclusion on coaching assignment and compensation. He wrote, "There do not appear to be any material issues regarding the compensation of coaches that could deny male or female student athletes access to coaching of equivalent quality, nature, or availability." Feldman committed to continue serving as UI's Title IX monitor for the next 2 years, as was outlined in the settlement. He wrote, "I also understand that UI will continue to monitor its Title IX compliance and make adjustments as issues may arise." On the Iowa Today page is a story written by John McLaughlin of the Gazette, "Shooting Racially Motivated." Dateline Cedar Rapids. A white Cedar Rapids man followed a man from a gas station to the man's workplace in Hiawatha and fired two gunshots at him Friday because of the man's race, according to a criminal complaint. 31-year-old Joshua T. Barnhart had followed the man from Casey's on 32nd Street Northeast in Cedar Rapids to Midland Concrete at 1395 Hawkeye Drive in Hiawatha, where the man works. Barnhart then got out of his vehicle, pulled the Ruger SP-101 handgun from his waistband and fired two shots at the man before fleeing, according to the complaint. Barnhart eluded officers until they used stop sticks on his vehicle. According to the complaint, Barnhart said he had targeted the victim because of his race. Barnhart has been charged with attempted murder, assault with intent to inflict serious injury with violation of individual rights, and going armed with intent, which are all felonies. Assault while displaying a dangerous weapon, which is an aggravated misdemeanor, and eluding, which is a serious misdemeanor. He's being held on $500,000 cash-only bond. Another story written by John McLaughlin of the Gazette, head-on collision injures teen driver. A 16-year-old girl was taken to a hospital for minor injuries early Sunday after a woman driving an SUV crossed a center line in northern Linn County and crashed head-on into the car the girl was driving. At 12:17 a.m., 50-year-old Julia Gharib of Marion was driving a Toyota 4Runner south on Highway 13 near the Linn-Delaware Road intersection when she crossed the center line and collided with a northbound Chevrolet Malibu driven by 16-year-old Ava Bakkenstead of Manchester. That's according to a Linn County Sheriff's Officer news release. Bakkenstead was transported by ambulance to Mercy Medical Center in Cedar Rapids for minor injuries. The release did not specify whether Gharib was injured. Both said they were wearing their seatbelts at the time of the crash. Gharib was charged with operating while intoxicated and improper use of lanes. Court records show Gharib was charged with second offense OWI Sunday after providing a breath specimen at the Linn County Jail, indicating a blood alcohol level of 0.094. The criminal complaint said Gharib had received a deferred judgment for OWI in Linn County in 2017. A very busy John McLaughlin has another story on the Iowa Today page. Man seriously injured in fire. Dateline, Cedar Rapids. A man was seriously injured in a house fire Saturday night in northwest Cedar Rapids. Around 11:30 p.m., the Cedar Rapids Fire Department was dispatched to 1730 11th Street Northwest on a report of a single-family house fire. Officials said in a news release that flames were visible from the front of the house when crews arrived. According to the release, while searching the two-story house, firefighters found an unresponsive man in a first-floor bedroom, according to a Facebook post by International Association of Firefighters Local 11 firefighters. The man was pulled from the home and taken to Unity Point Health St. Luke's Hospital with serious injuries. No others were found in the home, but several pets did die. In political news is a story written by Marissa Payne of the Gazette. Molly Donahue faces Kurt Ben Dixon in Senate 37 race. A second-term Democratic state representative faces a challenge from a Republican newcomer in the race for Iowa Senate District 37, representing eastern Cedar Rapids and Marion. Molly Donahue is a Democrat in the Iowa House and will face Kurt Ben Dixon in the November 8th general election. She narrowly defeated newcomer Austin Frerich in the June Democratic primary for the seat. Members of the Linn County Republican Party Central Committee in August nominated Ben Dixon of Cedar Rapids to challenge Donahue for the Iowa Senate 37 seat. Ben Dixon said, "I decided someone better step up and represent those conservative values." His priorities include fighting inflation and rising living costs by, quote, "eliminating needless government spending and red tape, improving public safety, and ensuring Iowa students are taught fundamentals and not an anti-American ideology," according to Ben Dixon's campaign website. Ben Dixon opposes attempts to defund the police and supports law enforcement so they have sufficient resources to combat violent crime and human trafficking. Ben Dixon has said he opposes the Linmar Community School District's policies to protect transgender students from discrimination. He supports a parents group suing the school district to prevent the politicization of K-12 education. The group argues the Linmar policy, passed in April, allows the children to make fundamentally important decisions about gender identity in school without parental involvement and shield those decisions from their parents. He believes parents should have the final say over what their children are taught. Ben Dixon has said he supports Republican Governor Kim Reynolds' proposal for publicly funded scholarships for private school tuition. Additionally, Ben Dixon said he supports free speech and Second Amendment rights, but that free speech is, quote, not as free anymore, because he felt people are being shut down in COVID-19 discussions or on college classrooms. He pointed to the Lindmar transgender policy as one case. Ben Dixon said, I believe in the Constitution the way it was written. I believe the Founding Fathers made a great system. With the state's nearly $2 billion budget surplus, Donahue said she favors putting funds toward tax breaks for working and middle-class Iowans to alleviate pressures caused by inflation and stagnant wages. Specifically, she envisioned a tax credit expansion for child care, lowering the income tax rates for the middle class, cutting the income tax for working Iowans juggling two or more jobs, and ending tax giveaways to corporations or millionaires. Donahue said she wants public schools to be fully funded, quote, so that we can provide a world-class education to all students, regardless of where they were born and live, with enough services and staff to make that happen, end quote. She opposes Governor Reynolds' proposals for publicly funded scholarships for private school tuition. To support Iowa's public K-12 schools, Donahue said she would like to bring the school supplemental state aid funding rate up to 4%, restore collective bargaining rights to educators, support the enhancement of teacher education programs to increase the number of prospective educators, and lower student-to-staff ratios. On the heels of the U.S. Supreme Court's overturn of the Roe v. Wade decision that had legalized abortion, Donahue said she is against bans on abortion. But as Iowa Republicans, who control the legislature, look to impose restrictions, those should be exceptions for the health or life of the mother, rape and incest, she said. She added, these medical decisions should be between a woman, her loved ones, and her family doctor. Abortion is health care, whether it be by choice or by medical necessity. Moving on to the Insight page, we have a guest editorial from Norman Sherman of Coralville, who's worked extensively in politics, including as Vice President Hubert Humphrey's press secretary. His headline says, anyone can run for president. Norman says, say it quickly before he or she disappears from your paper. Ben Sasse for president. Don't be vulgar. Try Kristi Noem. You know her record as governor of South Dakota. Or pick someone from another dozen or so mentioned by the great mentioner. Other Republicans I've read about as they visit caucus states are Ron DeSantis, Marco Rubio, Josh Hawley, Tom Cotton, Asa Hutchinson, Larry Hogan, Chris Christie, Nikki Haley, Mike Pompeo, Chris Sununu, Mike Pence, and Donald Trump Jr. Now, get ready for a stampede. If Donald Trump were to announce that he won't run because of some New York reason, a dozen, maybe more, other folks will apply for the job before daybreak the following morning. Some, well, at least one or two of those panting candidates would be an acceptable president and are honest, decent, reasonably wise, despite being Republican. But even in a more normal time, pre-Trump, when some people climbed out of bed and headed to the bathroom, they saw a mirror image of a president qualified in their own eyes. Running for president is more a compulsion than a calling. We could see it on the Democratic debate stage last time, and it flourishes in the Republican shadows now. Keep their names in mind. Many will run again and again. My only explanation is that some people are born convinced they should be President of the United States. They may keep it a secret until they can talk, but it never goes away when they can. Some of those people become doctors or lawyers or plumbers or Uber drivers, and many overcome their dreams and delusions. Some of them do also become excellent public servants, governors, or senators of distinction. That's when their prenatal chronic feelings return. I once shook hands with Harold Stassen, a good governor of Minnesota and a fine president of the University of Pennsylvania, and in his political career, Stassen was elected governor of Minnesota 3 times, in 1938, 1940, and 1942. He ran for the Republican nomination for president in 1940, 44, 48, 52, 64, 68, 80, 84, 88, and 92. He never became the Republican nominee, but apparently thought it might still happen the next time. He was 85 when he finally gave it up. Senator Eugene McCarthy, a Democrat for whom I briefly worked, was a hero for many for his opposition to the Vietnam War. He was a pretty good poet and a charismatic candidate. He ran 5 times and never came close. My boss, an eminently accomplished public servant, Hubert Humphrey, ran 3 times, the last one beyond his time and any chance to be nominated. He deserved to be president, but his time had passed, and his persistence was no way to end an exemplary career. I understand that being president means the history books and a presidential library. I understand the need for an open political society where anyone who wants should be able to run. But think the present system is chaotic, filled with irrelevant candidates. Party bosses of old are gone, but maybe the 50 state party chairmen could cut the field to 4 before final debates and the convention. Harold Stassen is no longer living. That's from Norman Sherman of Coralville, who's worked extensively in politics, including as Vice President Hubert Humphrey's press secretary. Today we have 2 community letters. One is for Marco Battaglia of Des Moines, who says, Iowa has made national news recently, unfortunately not for any of the great things happening across our state, but instead for the news about a restitution order imposed on a young woman after she fought back and killed her rapist. It is another example of the many mandatory minimums we have established in this country and across our state. Judges are bound by law to enact minimum penalties tied to specific crimes rather than use their judgment in sentencing. These penalties were not put in place by the judicial system, but by legislatures, many times against the recommendation of prosecutors and judges, and allow for no exceptions, including defense or immunity for victims of human trafficking, kidnapping, or rape. Mandatory minimums remove any consideration of the circumstances or the defendant's history. Rather than risk going to trial, and if convicted, spending a long time in prison, people accused of crimes often prefer to enter plea bargains, even when innocent, just to avoid the threat of mandatory minimum sentences. Legislatures created these scenarios, and legislatures can and should address these issues that have hurt too many Iowans. Is it time to roll back relics of the failed war on drugs, beginning with mandatory minimums like the $150,000 restitution a young woman has to pay for the family of the man who repeatedly raped her? That's from Marco Battaglia of Des Moines. We have another community letter from Larry Hodgson of Tipton, who says, Are you serious about the future of public education? After a decade of underfunding, attacks on teachers and loss of local control from Republicans in Des Moines, it's time to show that you care about our public schools, our teachers, and our children's education by voting on November 8th to send a Democrat to Des Moines in Iowa Senate District 41. Deb Vandergast will stand up for public schools, teachers, and our children's education. Are you serious about the health of our planet? While we watch and experience climate disasters around the world threatening hundreds of millions of people's lives, Republicans like Senator Chuck Grassley remain in the pocket of the fossil fuel industry. We need to send Democrats like Michael Franken and Christina Bohannon to D.C. to fight for a clean and safe environment for our children. Are you serious about the future of our democracy, your voting rights, and protecting a government of we the people? It is quite obvious that Grassley and Marionette Miller Meeks will stand with the autocrats and right-wing militias who would destroy what has made America a beacon of democratic freedom around the world. Michael Franken had defeated our has defended our democracy for four decades as a naval officer and will continue to do that as our U.S. Senator. Are you serious about our health care, women's rights, veterans' benefits, capping drug costs, common sense gun laws, and caring for the least fortunate among us? Show it by voting Democratic on November 8th. And that's a community letter from Larry Hodgson of Tipton. We will return to the Insight page shortly. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Monday, October 3rd on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. For now, let's turn to the obituaries. Taking a look now at the obituaries, we start with the other notices, the shorter notices. Out of Cedar Rapids, Walden's William, age 48, died Thursday, September 29th. The Bross Chapel and the Ava Center of Cedar Rapids will be in charge of those arrangements. From Decorah, Willard Holthouse, age 83, died Saturday, October 1st. The Helms Funeral Home in Decorah will be in charge of those arrangements. Also from Decorah, William Wagner, age 69, died Friday, September 30th. Again, the Helms Funeral Home of Decorah will assist the family. From Iowa City, Mary Ann Sladek Park, age 88, died Friday, September 30th. The Lensing Funeral and Cremation Service of Iowa City will be in charge of those arrangements. From Independence, Dolores D. Lynch, age 93, died Friday, September 30th. Assisting the family will be the White Funeral Home of Independence. From Shelbsburg, Thomas Gordon III, age 64, died Friday, September 30th. Assisting the family will be the Cedar Memorial Park Funeral Home of Cedar Rapids. From Tama, Lacine Cher Hennessy, age 53, died Saturday, October 1st. The Cruz Phillips Funeral Home of Tama, Toledo will be in charge of those arrangements. From Toledo, Eric Vance Wilhelmy, age 58, died Friday, September 30th. Again, the Cruz Phillips Funeral Home of Tama, Toledo will assist the family. And from Kansas City, Missouri, Donald J. Hundley, age 34, formerly of Aurora, died Wednesday, September 28th. Assisting the family will be the Fawcett Schmitz Funeral Home of Winthrop. Now for the longer funeral announcements. Out of Cedar Rapids, Frank G. Knapp, age 86, died Saturday, October 1st. A visitation will be held from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wednesday, October 5th at the Legacy Center at Murdoch Linwood in Cedar Rapids. A private service will follow. Burial will be in the Mount Calvary Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Passed away from Shelbsburg, Virginia Klein Snyder Bull, age 97, passed away Friday, September 30th at her home in Shelbsburg. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, October 7th at Evergreen Cemetery in Vinton. From Cedar Rapids, Michelle Roper, age 60, passed away Saturday, October 1st in the comfort of home, surrounded by her father, sister, daughter, grandchildren, and two special dog companions, Cookie and Juice. The family will greet friends from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wednesday, October 5th at Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids. Private burial will take place at the Oak Hill Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. In lieu of flowers, please direct memorials to her daughter and family at 1105 33rd Street Southeast in Cedar Rapids. The family would also like to use this space to encourage people of color to advocate for mental health services and treatment and support loved ones as they face certain adversities and diagnoses. Although Michelle faced certain hardships, her family says she remained on her side until the very end to ensure she had autonomy over self and support her in the best ways possible. From Center Point, Beverly Booth, age 75, died in her home after a short illness on Thursday, September 22nd, in Center Point. Bev's wish was for no funeral services. In lieu of flowers, the family would appreciate a donation to Mercy Care Hospice. From Oxford, Larry Downs, age 74, died at his home, surrounded by his family on Friday, September 30th.
Funeral services will be held at 10:30 Wednesday morning, October 5th, at St. Peter Catholic Church in Cosgrove, with burial to follow at the Cosgrove Cemetery. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the church, where a rosary will be recited at 4 p.m. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made in his memory to Cosgrove Hustlers 4-H Club or Essence of Life Hospice. Phyllis Ann Johnston Lurch, age 89, of Anamosa, passed away peacefully September 29th after complications resulting from COVID-19. Graveside funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Monday, October 3rd at Norwich Cemetery in rural Martell. Phyllis Lucille Lamb of Keokuk, formerly of Iowa City, died on September 24th at the Southeast Iowa Behavioral Health Care Center in Keokuk following a lengthy illness. As per her wishes, there will be no services and she will be interred in the Oakland Cemetery in Iowa City. The Viking Memorial Home in Keokuk is assisting the family with arrangements. Edward James Hosick, age 97, of Cloutier, passed away Saturday, October 1st at his home under the care of Cedar Valley Hospice. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, October 5th at Cruz Phillips Funeral Home in Tama, with Pastor Al Frank officiating. Interment will follow at Oneida Cemetery in rural Cloutier. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, October 4th at Cruz Phillips Funeral Home. Dolores May Whirling, age 90, of Tipton, died September 30th at West Ridge Care Center in Cedar Rapids. Memorial services will be determined at a later time in November. Services will be held at Trinity Lutheran Church of Tipton. Memorials may be given to Trinity Lutheran Church Memorial Fund, Tipton Senior Citizen Center, or Camp Courageous. David Lee Nemec, age 84, of Fairfax, passed away peacefully from an extended illness on Friday, September 30th, in his home. Visitation will be from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, October 6th, at Ross Chapel in the Ava Center in Cedar Rapids, at 2121 Bowling Street Southwest. A funeral mass will be at 10 a.m. Friday, October 7th, at St. John the 23rd Catholic Church at 8100 Roncalli Drive Southwest in Cedar Rapids, where viewing will be 1 hour prior to services. Burial will be at St. John's Catholic Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Robert R. Med, age 95, of Iowa City, passed away Sunday, August 7th, at the Briarwood Healthcare Center in Iowa City. Bob's family will greet friends from 3 to 5 p.m. Friday, October 7th, at Lensing Funeral Service at 605 Kirkwood Avenue in Iowa City. A celebration of Bob's life will begin at 5 p.m. at Lensing's. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to the New Windsor Cemetery in New Windsor, Illinois. As promised, back at the inside page, we have a thing from Todd Taylor, Senate District Number 40, who says, I am running for re-election in the newly drawn Senate District 40. This includes Northwest Cedar Rapids, Northeast Cedar Rapids, and all of Hiawatha and Robbins. I have always believed in Governor Tom Vilsack's initiative to make Iowa a great place to live, work, raise a family, and retire. To do this, we need to increase access to good-paying jobs and prepare Iowa learners to be highly skilled contributors in the workforce. Further, we can do this by investing in our educational system and developing early measurements to ensure all Iowa students are highly skilled. The cost and/or access to higher education and apprenticeship training should also not be a barrier. True investment in skilled workers will keep companies here and attract new employers to Iowa. For generations, Iowans have relied on great public schools to prepare our kids with the skills necessary to be their best again. We have lost sight of this in recent years. Rather than arguing over funding percentages, I want results. I believe we all want good teachers, smaller class sizes, and facilities that are up to date. For better skills results, I would test for reading in third, 5th, and 8th grades. This is important because educators tell me that it is increasingly difficult to get a child back on track with everything else if they are falling behind in reading by 9th grade. The efforts to cultivate worker training for areas that need skilled workers will help keep Iowans from leaving the state and reduce the brain drain when our best and brightest minds seek jobs in other states. This, in turn, will attract and keep employers and to come to Iowa and to stay here. Getting Iowa back to a strong and vibrant education system will keep families here. If we maintain a high quality of life with recreational and cultural opportunities like trails, sports venues, water parks, festivals, and small business incubators and farmers markets, we will keep younger people here. If we keep people here and connect workers to skills and skilled workers to good-paying jobs, Iowa will continue to be a great place to live, work, and raise a family and retire. That's from Todd Taylor, who is the Democratic candidate in Senate District 40. Now to the other side, from Chris Golick, Senate District 40. I have always been passionate about public service. After the flood of 2008, as a member of the Cedar Rapids City Council, we faced one of the most challenging times in our history. Residents were displaced from their homes, businesses were lost, and many of the unique things that made us a community were lost, damaged, or destroyed. Our community banded together and showed that we still had what mattered most, our people. We came together and developed strategies to clean up and rebuild. Our metro area is the second largest in the state. I am seeking election to the Iowa Senate in District 40 because our residents need representation in the party that currently controls the Iowa legislature. As one of the major economic engines in the state, we need a seat at the table when discussing issues that affect our area. We do not have that representation. I want to bring to Des Moines the same independent reasoning and decision-making I was known for during my 12 years on the City Council. The lessons I learned about bringing people together are essential when debating issues that have long-lasting consequences. I will focus my efforts on the following initiatives. 1. Economic development, retaining our existing businesses, creating new entrepreneurial enterprises, and developing workforce attraction and retention strategies. 2. Educational excellence, strengthening our educational system to ensure Iowa is competitive in economic development. 3. Encouraging innovation in how we educate our youth will be part of my strategy. 4. Quality of life, working for improvements that encourage people to live, work, and play in our community and state. This also is an important piece of our workforce development. And finally, fiscal responsibility, being fiscally responsible with taxpayers' money while planning for present and future needs. During my years on the City Council, I believe I helped bring different perspectives together to develop the best policy. I developed strong connections with state, economic development professionals, and other elected officials on both a state and national level. Through my leadership as president of the Iowa League of Cities and as an executive board member of the National League of Cities, I intend to bring this cooperative spirit to the state legislature and leverage this network to help grow our local and state economies. That's from Chris Golick, who is the Republican candidate in Senate District 40. On the community page, we have a story about you can help Pakistani artisans and especially rural women. Want to help improve the lives of rural Pakistani women? 10,000 Villages, a nonprofit fair trade store in downtown Iowa City, can help. 10,000 Villages will hold its 6th annual fair trade rug event from October 13th to 16th at the Hyatt Regency Hotel in Iowa River Landing in Coralville. The rugs for sale were created by women in rural Pakistani villages. The event is a partnership between 10,000 Villages and Bunyad, a fair trade artisan group in Pakistan. Bunyad means foundation. Bunyad provides a foundation for women by paying them a living wage to knot heirloom quality rugs on looms set in their homes. Women can work on the looms around their other household chores like caring for children, preparing meals, and tending their homes. Work on the looms gives women year-round stable employment that they have control over. With this income, women have found increased financial independence and can financially contribute to the success of their family. They are able to send their children to school and plan for the future. Having a wage-earning skill gives these women a sense of pride, as well as an avenue to true social change for themselves and their family. There are few other opportunities for employment of women in rural Pakistani villages. Elizabeth Pesado Ganell, the executive director of 10,000 Villages in Iowa City, in a news release said, "When you purchase a rug through 10,000 Villages, you not only invest in a beautiful piece of functional art, but you are also supporting lives, culture, and education in Pakistan, especially during the flooding this year." This year's rug event is particularly important to Pakistani artisans, women, and men. The country has been inundated with flooding, covering a third of the country. Communication has been disrupted, and U.S. partners are unable to get pertinent information on the well-being of the more than 850 families who make the hand-knotted rugs that will be available at the rug event. Many of the artisans who create the Persian and tribal rugs and hand-woven pillows and coasters live predominantly in the areas of the flooding. About 300 rugs will be for sale October 13th to 16th in a variety of designs and sizes ranging from 2 feet by 3 feet to 10 feet by 14 feet, plus runners. The rugs will be displayed at the Hyatt Regency Hotel at the Iowa River Landing at 300 East 9th Street in Coralville. Hours of the event are from 10 to 7 October 13th, 14th, and 15th, and 11 to 5 on Sunday, October 16th. Safety measures will be in place, and visitors are asked to wear a mask and socially distance. Also on the community page, we have some Eastern Iowa briefs. From Cedar Rapids, things are about to get scary at Tommy's Express. Stop by either Cedar Rapids location at 4035 First Avenue Southeast or 4420 Westdale Parkway Southwest on October 22nd and 23rd, plus again on the 29th and 30th, to experience a spooktacular good time. From 7 a.m. to 11 p.m., your car will be cleaned while you make your way through the tunnel of terror full of ghosts and ghouls. And the cost is $20. From Maquoketa, Hurstville Interpretive Center will hold a harvest seed event at 1 p.m. October 15th at the center, which is at 18670 63rd Street. Learn about and walk the prairie and collect native prairie plant seeds that will be planted later on Jackson County Conservation property. The program is free, but you must register 48 hours in advance, and here's a phone number for you to do that. It's area code 563-652-3783. Again, 563-652-3783. From Springville, the Linn County Conservation Board will hold a public input meeting regarding the Grant Wood Trail. It'll be from 4:30 to 6:30, October 18th at the American Legion Post 331, which is at 252 Broadway Street in Springville. Dennis Gomat, the Conservation Board Executive Director, said in a news release, "There is interest in creating a trail connection to the city of Springville from the Grant Wood Trail. Several areas of the trail are developed from Marion, with more segments under design or study." The public input meeting is a drop-in format with displays and information available. There will be no formal presentation, but conservation staff and consultants will be there. Fill out a questionnaire there and provide written comments. Moving on to sports, there's a story written by K.J. Pilcher of the Gazette. Postma, Linmar, aim for state. Dateline Marion. Linmar's Caden Postma has been a steady player. With 1 week left, the senior wants to make the most of it. He said, "I'm very excited. It's kind of our last hurrah." Postma will compete in the Class 5A district today at the Thunder Hills Country Club in Epworth. He will attempt to claim his third straight state berth. Postma tied for 22nd at the state golf a year ago. Postma, who was runner-up medalist at the Rotary Pribble in August, said, "I was hoping to improve on last season. It's not a bad season whatsoever. I'm shooting some pretty good scores." Interestingly, Postma said he plans to graduate high school early and play in golf meets as he irons out his future. He said, "I'm graduating after the first semester, so I'll be going down south to a couple tournaments in the spring and over the summer." He used a weekend meet to warm up for the postseason. He placed fifth at the Iowa PGA All-Baugh Junior Invitational at Talons of Tuscany Golf Club in Ankeny. Postma is averaging about 77 per 18 holes for the second straight season and owns a 38.54 combined adjusted average. Postma said he devoted time in the weight room to pack on 10 to 15 pounds of muscle and in simulators to gain club speed for more distance off the tees. He said, "I gained about 20 yards with my driver, and that's really helped a lot." The Lions have cracked the top 10 of 5A with a 157.17 combined adjusted average. Senior Matthew Buse leads the team with a 77.14 18-hole average. Freshman Christian Cloyd has been a pleasant addition to the lineup, while senior Carter Bond has been consistent. Linmar is attempting to return to state, placing sixth in 2020. Linmar golf coach Chris James said after Linmar claimed the Mississippi Valley Conference Valley Division title last Monday, "I knew we had Caden, who's the number one golfer, on just about any team or could be." Linmar will be in a competitive field that includes top-ranked Cedar Falls, Cedar Rapids Jefferson, Kennedy, Prairie, City High, Iowa City Liberty, and host Western Dubuque. Prairie is looking for its third straight state berth. The top three teams in East District and the top two individuals plus ties on non-qualifying teams will advance to the state tournament. Here's a story about National 4-H Week written by J.D. Otterbein from Iowa State University. He says the anticipation is building for National 4-H Week, during which millions of youth, parents, volunteers, and alumni across the country will be celebrating everything 4-H. Linn County 4-H is observing National 4-H Week this year by showcasing the incredible experiences that 4-H offers young people and will highlight the remarkable 4-H youth in our community who work each day to make a positive impact on those around them. The theme of this year's National 4-H Week is Opportunity for All. The positive environment provided by our 4-H caring adult volunteers ensures that kids in every county and parish in the country, from urban neighborhoods to suburban schoolyards to rural farming communities, can take on leadership roles and are empowered with the skills to lead in life and career. The 2022 graduates of the Linn County 4-H program shared with us some of their favorite opportunities and skills they learned from 4-H. Katie from Central City High School said, "Meeting new people and learning how to get involved and being social were my favorite parts of 4-H. Annalise from Marion High School said, "4-H gave me the ability to communicate with other people and have the confidence to strike up a conversation with someone whom you might not know too well." Trenton of Marion Homeschool Association, the 2022 graduates, one of the 2022 graduates said, "Attending the Youth Council lock-in is where I made new friends." Lauren from Mount Vernon High School said, "I learned about health because it helped me determine health is something I want to include in my career." Kaylee from Springville High School said, "Static, non-livestock because I love being able to express my creativity." Abigail, Centerpoint High School in Linn County, "Photography, it is such a fun hobby to have, and it allows you to tell a story with each picture you take." More than 400 4-H youth and 100 volunteers from the community are involved in 4-H. For over 100 years, 4-H has inspired families, shaped careers, and impacted communities. For more information on the 4-H Youth Development Program, please contact your Linn County ISU Extension and Outreach Office. Before we wrap it up, we do have a couple of looks at things to do today. Health Connection Recovery Support Group. This is a free, peer-led support group for any adult, 18 and older, who is experiencing symptoms of a mental health condition. 6 to 7:30 tonight at the National Allegiance on Mental Illness at 610 2nd Avenue Southeast in Cedar Rapids, and the cost is free. Health Going Inward with Sounds and Vibrations. Experience sound, stillness, playfulness, and relaxation through the enigmatic vibrations of Himalayan and crystal singing bowls. Kathy Broghammer will lead attendees to connect with their inner selves through the Song of Bowls. It's from 6:30 to 7:30 tonight at the Prairie Woods Franciscan Spirituality Center at 120 East Boysen Road in Hiawatha. And that does it for today's reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for Monday, October 3rd. I'm your reader, Kelly Neff. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. Thank you for listening.